Sessionable.
Welcome everyone to Sessionable.
Don't get too excited, it's alright.
Live.
This is our first live event since last year, which was pretty fun, so hopefully we have as good a time, if not better, today. Let's introduce our guests for the afternoon. First of all, we have Doc from Doctor's Orders Brewing.
Good afternoon.
You can say hello, he doesn't bite, it's all good. We need to get everyone shots, man. This is getting a bit too soft. What's going on?
Hello.
And we also have Jack and Mick from Pirate Life Brewing.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us. Oh,
how does that make you feel, Doc?
Well, I know where the love is in this room.
And the winner is...
Show over. We're done.
Shut down.
We should say, Doc, friend of the show now. I think you've officially qualified third episode that you're doing with us.
I think it's done more episodes than you have, Brad.
Sorry?
I think it's done more episodes than you have.
Yeah, probably.
I think Lee might have some intro music.
Yeah, maybe.
For you guys.
Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate's life for me. We pillage, we plunder, we rifle and loot. Drink up, me hearties, yo ho. We kidnap and ravage and don't give a hoot. Drink up, me hearties, yo ho. Yo ho, a pirate's life for me.
Yeah, I think that's enough. That's
oh,
absolutely seamless there.
Don't worry, Doc, you're not getting away
with
it.
DJing. And did you have one for Doc as well?
The doctor, give me the
yeah!
loving you.
No go, Huey, go.
Bad keys to loving you.
All right.
Yeah. So,
Lee,
DJ session over here. So before we get started, we'll do a little bit of housekeeping as well. Bathrooms are just behind you over there. Beer's going to be coming out and food is coming out. If you want to drink ahead of schedule and, you know, really top yourself up, we're not going to stop you. Go to the bar. We really encourage everyone to get involved. So we've got a wireless mic. Lee's going to come around. So if you want to ask a question anytime at all, just put your hand up. Try not to shout it out because... I mean, I think anyone that listens to this podcast is probably in the room anyway, but just in case there's like one person so they can actually hear what's going on. So yeah, feel free to get rowdy. I mean, it's us, you know what's going
to
happen.
And just to say, there will be a prize for best question. This bottle of Abstract AB11 will be available to the best question of the day, so get thinking.
I think Brad won best question last year.
Yeah, so you can't win this time, Brad.
So you could end up sitting here.
Yeah,
this could be you.
The only prize he got was, you know, being on the podcast with us, which isn't much of a prize.
Man, you're a fucking downer today, bro. What's going on?
All right, let's get to a uplifting topic, and our first beer, which is Mountain Goat Summer Ale. You can crack it open and
I already have.
Give it a swig. Thanks, Mountain Goat, for supplying this beer for us.
Big fans of Mountain Goat for what they've done for us. So it's the second year in a row they've slung us some free beers. And, you know, it's actually really good timing to have a Mountain Goat. Who's had a Mountain Goat since the buyout?
I haven't, actually.
Three people. Yeah.
It was like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's still. Like, I mean, I have Summer Ale on the regular, so, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I think having this beer, we talked about it last year, it's a fucking great smashable beer, but, you know, it's really apt timing with the buyout. So, I mean, what are you...
Let's just say, for those who don't know and haven't heard about it in the news, I'm sure everybody is aware, but Mountain Goat were bought out by Asahi a few weeks back. The latest of the Australian independent craft breweries to be bought out by a multinational. There's been quite a bit of... a storm.
Yeah, it's been a lot of knickers and knots, hasn't there?
Yeah, as usual with these types of things. Yeah.
What do you guys reckon? Is anyone like never going to drink Mountain Goat again besides the free one they have in front of them, or like, when I first read it, I was really shocked. I didn't see it coming, but then
I was surprised.
But I think I don't know. The general consensus I think is like fucking good on them. Dave and Cam earned it. Like they busted their balls for like 18 years. Yeah.
I think it's a good sign of success as well.
They've done a ripper job
for the last well, 18 years, as you say. So
yeah.
It gets to a point when you want to go bigger and better, and that's a good way to do it, I think.
Yeah. I mean, and I mean, I'm sure even up to this day, they've been busting their balls. So if they can get a chance to sort of step back and actually enjoy some of the fruits of all those 18 years, that's probably not a bad thing either.
So if you put this in context, like Mountain Goat were one of the first craft brewers of the new wave in Australia, in a point where internet wasn't big and their marketing was done through post and flyers and stuff like that. And they had this concept called like the Goat Army, and they would come to Sydney probably every 6 months and they would do an event. And I remember one at the the Sackville Hotel in Balmain.
The Sacky.
And this is about the same time. There was a couple of other Sydney sort of craft brewers around the same time that they were there. They did a bit of an event and shared some taps and stuff like that. Those Sydney brewers are gone now.
Done and dusted, yeah.
And they did a fantastic event, sort of matching sort of food with beer, but having to educate about what beer was, what flavour was, what the styles were. And then when they were matching it with like things like oysters with cracked pepper and other bits and pieces on top and everything else, and just, and giving you like an experience, that was one of the things for me of actually finding craft beer in Australia after coming from New Zealand, of understanding what craft beer was and not finding it here, which is why I started home brewing, but then finding someone in Australia that were doing it, and this is 20 years ago.
That's pretty cutting edge at the time, I think.
I reminded Dave and Cam about that a couple of weeks, or probably actually in May this year, about that. And it brought back memories from them, actually. And they were saying, even in Melbourne, they would actually bicycle around and doing mail drops and letter drops of their flyers and stuff like that, just trying to spruik their business, because they started from absolutely nothing.
Yeah. And what it's grown to now is, like, pretty fucking phenomenal, I think.
And maybe that's part of the shock factor as well, the fact that they do have that heritage as a craft brewer in Australia. Maybe that's part of the reason. It's like, you know, you've got this impression of them as one of the grassroots craft breweries, and maybe that was part of the surprise that, you know, they have, it seemed quite suddenly, changed direction. I know they've been canning this out of Asahi in Australia for some time.
I think they've also got to be credited with the fact that, you know, the can revolution, I think Mountain Goat have done played a really big part in that.
Yeah, big time.
And I think particularly, you know, when it comes down to summer events and, you know, fishing trips, picnics and those sort of things, I think everywhere that I go over the last 3 or 4 years, you see Mountain Goat in a can, and it's a terrific thing from that canning point of view.
I mean, without jumping in and saying too much, but I would imagine that without Mountain Goat Summer, it would have been a lot harder for you guys to put all your stuff out in cans as well.
Yeah, I think so. Although it was a decision we made pretty quickly. You know, Jack and Red and I have been talking about, you know, building the brewery for a couple of years, and the discussion, we never actually had a discussion on cans. It was just going to be cans.
Yeah, nice.
It was just as simple as that. And that was mainly generated from what we've seen happening in the US.
Yeah, cool. Thoughts?
No. Well, I guess the key thing for me is they're still involved. So Dave and Cam, whilst they don't own it, they're still running the Mountain Goat brand.
It's not under, like they're jumping on a yacht ownership. Somewhere, yeah.
So for them, it's a fantastic payday and everything else, but it's still a company that they built, they're emotionally invested in, they look after the staff and everything else as well, and it's still Mountain Goat, so...
Yeah.
Over time, things will change. It always happens with corporate takeovers, either any industry you're ever in. But for the immediate future, it's still Mountain Goat. It's just it just means the profits are going offshore.
Yeah, but I don't think it's anything we should be surprised about. You know, big breweries been buying up craft breweries in the US since about 2006. So it's just a natural progression, I think, as your business grows and develops. You know, these guys are now 18 years older. They're coming to a different stage in their life, and they've got to make those decisions. And it's going to happen more regularly. And you'll probably see another two or three, in the next 12 months.
Most definitely. Yeah.
and that's just part of normal business practice.
I mean, you know, this year we've seen. Sorry, jump in. Hold on, we'll get the mic for you, man.
There we go.
Sorry, Joel.
No, that's okay. All this discussion around, you know, whether they should have sold, is the right thing. Do you think the beer's going to change?
No.
Has Little Creatures Pale Ale changed?
No.
Yes.
No. Like, it's arguably it's available more and distribution's gotten better of it.
But I mean, beers change all the time regardless of who owns the brewery. Like, you know, hop varietals or people change the hops in their beers. But I don't think Little Creatures has changed that much in... since the Lion takeover to the pact that, like, I don't think they've purposely gone, all right, let's change this malt bill. You know, it's just a natural evolution of the change of the beer. So
I was involved with Creatures pre and post-Lion, and I spent probably close to a year under Lion Nathan, and not one thing changed in the brewery. Still making the same beers. The only thing changed was fucking paperwork and meetings, basically. Yeah. That's all we did half the time.
Having meetings with marketing and...
We have a meeting about a meeting to have a meeting.
I think that's always the concern, though, is that the beer might change.
Yeah, I was just going to, you know, point out it's, you know, most of the time, you know, it, whether it's 1 year, 2 years, you know, nothing is going to change. But then if there's, you know, I don't know, company goes in tough times, change of ownership, change of staffing, and then, you know, you just... Someone looks at it with fresh eyes and decides that, you know, well, you know, hang on, maybe we can cut a few corners here. Like, you know, I'm not saying it will happen, but it's just, yeah.
Yeah, but that's a very good point. I was about to go there. You know, I think it remains to be seen whether it's going to be, like, a success story. Like, for example, I think Goose Island's been a success story. They've still been cranking out really good beers. But when Nugner got bought out by Hansa Borg, you know, just a few months ago, Kirtle had a bit of an explosion and quit the company because he hated how it was being run. So, you know, there's two contrasting examples of what a big company can do to a smaller craft brewer.
I think also you can see, like, across the world with these takeovers, that it's almost becoming a model that you can build up your first brewery, sell that, cash out, and then start a second brewery and do whatever the fuck you want because you don't have that financial problems anymore.
They normally put a clause in there.
Yeah, there's usually a non-compete clause.
Yeah.
So the guys in Frio from Creatures can't touch a brewery for years.
I mean, that's what sort of happened, like, on a different scale, but with Coca-Cola and, you know, when they sold Peroni and they had that clause as well. But, yeah, it's interesting. But, like, you're set for life after that and you can sort of, yeah.
But I think the big thing as well is these big companies are buying these breweries for one reason, is because it's a success.
And that's credibility.
And that's when Lion Nathan took over Little Creatures, everyone was a bit kind of worried about it on a brewing perspective, but they came in and said, look, this is a winning company and why are we going to ruin something that's doing so well? And that's their perspective.
They paid a big figure because of what Creatures is. The worst thing they could do is, like, upheave that straight away.
Yeah, that's right. They're not going to ruin something that does so well.
So a question for you, Jack. Having been through the Little Creatures, like you say, pre and post buyout from Lion Nathan, would that experience make you more or less inclined to be approachable or receptive to an offer for Pirate Life in the future?
Mate, we're only 6 months old.
Getting ahead of ourselves here, but, you know...
Is going quite topsy-turvy, you never know.
Does it shape your opinion? Does it give you, you know...
Yes and no. I know I'd be lying if I said that there's always a number for someone.
Yep.
I think. But, yeah, as we say, we're only 6 months old, so it's something we don't even think about, and it's not on our agenda to build a brewery for 2 or 3 years and sell out, but... If it's a successful thing and 5-10 years down the line something happens, you know, you're always going to look at something that's on the table, I think.
Yeah. What about you, Doc? Do you reckon there's a figure? Does everyone have a price?
I remember being asked this question about 3 years ago. I'm like, no way, you know, no way. I'm still building this thing. There's still a vision in my head. There's still a lot of creative influences. Now, 6 years in, I guess... Everyone does have their price. If someone offered me the right price and whatever, then there's a potential. It may be an option. I guess it would depend on what else I want to do and what else I want.
Of course.
To see, it's an industry that I love. I love being in the beer industry. It's not one that you do necessarily for financial reward, but you do it for the experience and everything else around it. So.
And there is a lot of hard work with sometimes very little financial reward, I would imagine.
But you have a hell of a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And you meet some awesome people and have some fantastic experiences, life experiences. And if you get to the end of life and you've had a fun time and had some awesome experiences, then you know, you may not be financially, you know, viable or even financially rich, but you've had an awesome time and you've lived your life. So, yeah.
So I think, was it Lagunitas? It was valued at... So 50% of the shares was $500 million. So they're a $1 billion brewery.
I'd be happy with that.
So yeah, I was going to ask.
Sold. That's my value.
What do you reckon, Mick? Would you consider?
But have you read his book?
No, I haven't.
Read his book and how they built the company to be where it is today. And
they're just a bunch of like hippie stoners, right?
Yes, yes, and no. musicians with a bent for other substances and other things. But at the same time, you know, they did it on a shoestring. He was 5-6 years in, still working full time in another gig to pay for it.
Yeah,
remortgaging his house every time things went up to buy new equipment, building bigger breweries. Obviously, 2 years ago they built the Chicago brewery. They're building another one down in the, I think it's New Mexico or something. Now they're now selling out or half of the company as well. So you know they freaking earned it.
Oh, best def, yeah.
They've earned it.
It's hard to say anyone in the craft beer industry who's like sold out and to say they haven't earned it. It'd be very hard because it's a hard slog. No matter what you start with, and you feel like enough to have some capital when you start it, you're putting it all on the line.
Yeah, so the owners, like the guys that run it, they even though there's other shareholders and everything else as well within the private side before selling out, they don't have family to pass it on to. And that's something the American industry is going through now, is you're in that sort of second wave of craft where people are reaching the retirement age, and what do they do with this company that they've built? If they don't have family or anyone else to pass it on to, then you are looking to sell.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
So in that respect then, do we think there are any other local or regional or interstate Aussie breweries that are prime?
Should we put a raffle out and everyone can just shout out whoever wins gets a prize next year?
Winner gets a sessionable t-shirt.
I think Ferrell's a good target.
Do you think so? Do you think Ferrell would?
I don't think Ferrell will go.
I don't either.
Ridge Road, Four Pines. I think Four Pines is a good one. Yeah,
Stone and Wood.
I don't think Stone and Wood would, because they sold their share back to Lion when Little Creatures.
Yeah, they
bought back.
I mean, so, Stone and Wood's doing some pretty big things at the moment with like their Square. Was it Square Keg? Their distribution, and they've started up a cider arm recently as well.
That's never a good thing.
Yeah, it is quite, yeah. I mean, I love me some Sona Wood, but like, yeah, it's like, ooh, really? Yeah. No, I mean, but it's becoming not so much a craft beer, but a mainstream beer, right? And
they're probably primed. How about Young Henry's?
They just done the same thing as well. They just bought back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of their foundational investors has just separated from the company. They get the brewery in WA, but they've had to buy them out, which has stopped their expansion through into other states. But they're keeping it in house. So,
but it like yeah, exactly right. But from a if you're Lion Nathan or whichever big corporation, like Young Henry's is a brand that comes with a lot of credibility behind it, and it's got that image. You know,
but
what
it's
I mean?
the people that are part
that
of that
make it. Yeah,
you can't buy that. You buy the company. You don't buy that.
Yeah, I'd be hard pressed to see a lot of Young Henry's boys hanging around if that did go down the line. I don't think Lion Nathan makes you take a shirt off every time. So, there's like three people in a room.
But also, this is Richard's second crack at it, right?
Of course, and he's learned a lot from the first one.
He's learned a lot from the first one, and still learning a lot from this one, I think, as well. But they've got a lot further to go yet.
So, looking at slightly larger scale, Mountain Goat wasn't the only big buyout in recent weeks. SAB Miller was also bought out by AB InBev for $122 billion.
That's another small craft brewer gone. Oh, damn it.
Well, this is the question. Does this change anything for the people sat in this room? You know, does it make any difference whatsoever that the two biggest global beer companies have now combined and now one third of the world's beers will come from one organization?
I think it's a bit scary, actually.
Has anyone worked in a really big organization and realized how disorganized it is?
Yeah.
And realizing that they're going to sell basically one in every three beers globally, and the people that are making decisions versus the people that are doing it and having some sort of chain of understanding of what's going on, it's just going to be a mess.
I think it's a bit of a win for the craft sector, because it just means they're going to be so far behind and they're going to be like so slower to react to the way the industry changes. And one of the key things about the crafts is the guys that, you know, you just do whatever you want to some degree, and so you can react and sort of lead those changes, and they're going to be like 5 years slower to react to them.
Does it mean that they compete more so on price than they do at the moment?
No, I mean, you're still looking at distribution in every country that changes. I think in Australia it just means that you order your Peroni from CUB instead of from Lion Nathan. The one thing I'm really excited about from, like, you know, working in the industry before is, like, when CUB previously had Corona and then I had to give it to Lion, like, part of the deal was I have to give them the remaining stock in the country. So I just fucking fire sold it through Dan Murphy's just so there was nothing in the country for like 3 months. So I'm really keen to see what they do to get back at them, because they don't have to give it back. So there's going to be some, like, I don't drink Corona, but there's going to be some pretty cool pricing going out. Christmas presents all around.
And that's it. I don't think anyone in this room drinks a lot of the beers that come out of those companies, yeah. So it's not really going to affect any of us.
No. I mean, the only thing, on a previous holiday, I went to Czech Republic and I went to the Pilsen Urquell Brewery. And if you're ever in that area, it's worth going just because it's like the Willy Wonka of beer, the way they set up the tour. But they have like a map of the world and it has a light globe for every single brewery that's owned. I can't remember who was it, one or two, SAB or whatever. And it's pretty scary to see a map of the world and every single brewery owned by that company. And you imagine that combining with another one. It's pretty insane. Yeah.
Okay. On to packaging and branding of beer.
Tinnies.
Very nice looking Mountain Goat can, bright orange, stands out on a shelf. Mick, you mentioned that you guys have gone down the route of cans. It was never a question for you guys. You always wanted to go down the canning line. Doc, you started bottling within the last 12 months. Mm-hmm. Bottles versus cans. So Jack and Mick.
Cans every time.
So why? Why?
Why?
Cans?
I think there's lots of, you know, little reasons, but the one we believe with our beer is that it just allows a fresher product to hit the market in the best shape it possibly can. And Greg from Stone once, you know, in my many conversations with Greg and James from BrewDog, we used to talk about, you know, how hops deteriorate. The moment you put a beer into a container, whether it's a bottle or a can, you know, that's the freshest you're ever going to see those hops. So they start to deteriorate pretty quickly. And in our belief, whether it's right or wrong, is we believe that the can, you know, holds back that deterioration a little bit better than the bottle. And that's our underpinning scenario while we do cans. Yeah, we can get 100 on a pallet instead of 72 or 84. They you know, freeze down or cool down easier. They're easier to recycle. There's a lot of those sort of stories. You can fit more in the fridge. That's always a good one. They're better for picnics and fishing and all those sort of things. But the reality is, we're pretty big on. There's two words you'll hear us talk about a lot is freshness and balance. And we just simply believe it's a better way to get to the beer to the customer as fresh as we possibly can.
Yeah, nice one.
And Doc, you went down the.
I think we have another point to add to that.
Sorry.
Yeah. When I get angry on the canning line, there's no broken glass everywhere. So. I can throw the thing fucking everywhere.
Just bounces.
The lid's flying everywhere.
He has been known to get angry.
So I went the bottle route because as a sort of a cuckoo brewer, I use my mate's breweries to do my beers. And most of the breweries I used didn't have bottle lines or canning lines. The one that did have a canning line, they were the first sort of to do it in Australia, and they had it as an exclusivity option. They didn't let anyone else use it, and they still don't. Now, it's not because of exclusivity. It's because of the volume that they're doing in cans and the export that they're doing with it to Japan, etc. So for me, the journey to get into a packaged product other than draft was more about finding a facility where I could still brew the beer myself, still, you know, if anyone fucks up my beer, it's me and not sort of someone that's just contracted to brew my recipe, but also to do it properly. And that's what I found with my distributor. It was only after I signed with them that I learned that they're actually opening a brewery a few months later, and then there was a bottling line associated with it, which is a nice Italian bottling line. Yep. It's bottle conditioned, everything else, so stability and bottle, everything else is fantastic. There's no need for pasteurization or anything like that. It's everything's holding up. We're 12 months in now. We put 12 months on the bottle for a best before, hoping that it would stand up for 12 months, and we haven't had any issues around that side. So that's all working well. bottles isn't the be all and end all, though. That's the medium we launched in. Chances are in the next 3 or 4 months you'll see us out in cans as well. But again, it's a
how's that?
Get some support for that.
It's
breaking news.
It'll be yeah, you heard it here first.
Exclusive.
It'll be it won't be initially the brands that we've got in bottles now. We're looking to release a year round. The business is building. We need to be at a price point and a volume in vessel as well. So going from 500ml bottles into 300ml series cans for a year round product and everything else to meet the price point. Everything else you need to do as part of being in a packaged product is still to come. So a bit of both, mix and match.
I think one of the exciting things about cans, and I see this a lot in particularly in WA and South Australia in the retail outlets, is they're now actually putting in most bottle shops you've got fridge doors. They're now allocating a fridge door or two to cans. And the reality is that those fridge doors are now bringing more income into those bottle shops than any other door in the in the place. Because you walk into a bottle shop and see a fridge door full of cans, the ability to do interesting designs, the vibrancy of the colour, all those sort of things immediately attracts the punter, the customer, and it's quite an interesting change from, just particularly in the last 12 months I've started to see that.
Yes, you're also seeing it at some of the small bar series as well, where they don't have tap points, and they're also short on space and short on wastage. Cans for them are a viable option to keep waste down and everything else.
Yeah, so, can-only bars is something you see.
So it's starting. Again, that's the pointy end, but it starts as a trend and it manifests. And
it's like everything else in this industry, isn't it? Yeah.
With the canning line, is there a limitation on, so say you want to introduce a new beer and you want to put it to market, does there have to be a minimum quantity that you use, or can you just put it out as small as you want?
No, minimum order for cans is 50,000, so you can't really do single batch release cans.
So how does that affect, like when you guys want to start doing seasonals, that kind of thing, does that mean you have to plan fairly broad seasonal beers, or can you go as extreme as you want and just throw it out to the market?
Yeah, I suppose it's just at the end of the day, you got to buy 50,000 cans and sell 50,000. Which we're going to kick off next year, and do a summer release. And if it takes a month and a half to sell 50,000 cans, we'll go on to a new one. Or if it takes 4 months, just use them all and then go on to the next one, basically.
So what you're seeing in some of the overseas markets is they're doing blank cans. You can get blank cans in a couple of different colours, like silver, black, or even just do the whole series in black. And then actually running it through, if you've got a bottling line in your brewery as well, run it through and do like a label on the can. And you can do like small series and that. It's pretty big in the UK. It's hit and miss depending on how well it's done. Some of them do it quite well and you don't know that it's a printed label on a can.
Is that like the Mornington, the lacto stout that they did?
I missed that one. Was that the one with the cow?
It was like a silver wraparound.
Beavertown do it for some of their limited release.
Have you seen the Neighbourhood Brew one?
No, I haven't.
500ml can, unbelievable. Yeah, that's a wraparound.
Yeah, awesome.
Incredible. Yeah, so you'll probably be seeing a little bit of that. It does, if it's not done right, it does sort of cheapen the product and its image on the shelf. If it's done right and you got you work well with your supplier for your labels and everything else, it can work well as well.
Is that something you're looking into then?
That's a potential. So I think the best we got was a minimum order quantity of like 48,000 or something like that. Depending on, there's only two major suppliers of cans, and depending what series of cans you're in, there's also shortages during high season, which is sort of summer, from the 375 mils for, this is what Mountain Goat are in, but also your Tui's and everything else as well. So high season, getting a supply of those.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Our couple of wizard brewers decided that they'd like to put their beer into 355 mil cans. And they only make those in New Zealand, so that adds another sort of little perspective to cash flow and ordering as well.
So just picking up on something that Doc said there about the image of the can and of the brand, how important is brand image to craft brewers now? Is it something that's become more important to you guys? I mean, you're two brewers that have very strong brand images on the shelves and on your merchandise. Traditionally, Macro have kind of had to rely on their brand because the product maybe hasn't been so strong and identifiable through flavour. But I think we're now seeing more of an increase in craft brewers really wanting to push their brand too. How important is that for you?
I think it's from our point of view, it's there are three key components in what we try to do is make really good beer, present it in the best possible way from a packaging point of view, and tell a true story. And you know, those three all sit equally. So it's vitally important for us that, you know, as part of our brand development, is that the look of pirate life, keeping it as simple as we possibly can. I'd say it's right up there with being one of the most important things that we can do.
I think you guys have done a pretty cracking job on it as well. Yeah, I think both the Pirate Life and Doctor's Orders have used the medium of their bottles really, really well.
So when you go into a bottle shop, you either know what you're going in to buy, or you're browsing the shelves for something to buy that's something that interests you, whether it's a name, whether it's a brand, whether it's a style, whether it's a flavor, whether it's something else. So if you know what you're going in to buy and you see it, fantastic. If you're not, then you need something that catches someone's attention. And they buy it. So the way I see it is, if you don't have any brand awareness, the look of the bottle, the can, the whatever will sell the first one. What's inside it will sell it the second time, third time, or whatever. So having a standout image, something that's got a memory from either a colors or a name or something else, will give some recognition to the brand. If you've got consistency across that, then you've got something that will people go in, and even if they're in a rush, they'll see something, it's like, yes, bam, I had it, it was awesome, whatever, I'll have another one, and take it from there.
Yeah, awesome.
Good perspective.
Just a quick question.
Make it quick. Are there any areas where, you know, are there any limitations on cans versus bottles? Like, you know, I've never heard of can conditioning. I don't know if it works in the same way.
It does.
I've never seen a lambic in a can. I've never seen,
it's coming.
You know.
Well,
yeah. So, yeah.
What about...
Not from me.
What about Rottenback? You get a Flemish red in a can.
It's not a lambic.
But it's, yeah.
But yeah, just curious. Like, are there, you know, essentially
I don't think there is. No limitations to it at all.
Yeah, right.
So within Europe, can conditioning is a thing, and I was questioning it because it's like, if I'm going to go into cans, I want forced carbonation. I want to be able to someone to drink from the can, drink the whole lot, and not have the sediment up there if it doesn't sit the style of what it is. And I learnt that can conditioning is a thing, and it just isn't happening in Australia yet.
But I think you'll see more and more interest in beers going into cans now that it's quite a popular thing. We'll see lambic, sours, big. It's like BrewDog just put a 14% stout in a can. You know, that's
I'm not surprised. Yeah. So we got the second beer in front of us now. This is yours, Doc. Do you want to tell us what we're drinking and tell us the story?
Absolutely. So this is a rhubarb tart wheat ale.
What's it called?
This is called Serum. It's a 4.9% semi-Gosa Berliner Weiss crossover beer with rhubarb in it. I've done a number of rhubarb beers over the last 5 years or so, and each time I've tried to get more rhubarb into the beer than before. And I think this is the limit of getting rhubarb into a beer. Rhubarb is sort of a vegetable that you grow up with in sort of Scotland and New Zealand and certain parts of North America. Not probably so widely known in Australia, but there's a couple of fantastic growers in...
I think there's an interjection to have there.
in Tasmania.
I was going to say, I was born and bred in Tassie, and we had rhubarb crumble every day of the week.
Yeah, rhubarb.
So my first foray into doing rhubarb in a beer was about 5 years ago, and it was in the Hunter, and I can't remember, something like 70 kilos of rhubarb that had to be strung and quartered and boiled down into a mush and then strained, and we put it in the fermenter, and Keith was still pulling strings of rhubarb out of the fittings on the fermenter 2 months later. So this is probably the second biggest and third commercial brew using rhubarb that I've done, but I've found a supplier for rhubarb, 100% really tart rhubarb juice out of Tasmania, Which makes it a lot easier. There's no stringy rhubarb artifacts left in fermenters up in.
Besides brewing, what would you use a rhubarb extract for?
A lot of cordials, fruit juices. A lot of restaurants and chefs use it for
sauces,
compotes, and stuff like that. Yeah.
Cool. So you just use it in the kettle?
No, just into the bright tank for mixing in because it doesn't ferment afterwards. It's just like an additive at the end. So essentially, this beer is essentially like a gosa in terms of the way it's brewed. It's essentially a wheat beer at the end of the main part of conversion of the sugars. We add a lot of acidulated malt to really lower the pH. Use a lot of wheat yeast to ferment it out. It ferments quite dry. And then the rhubarb juice lowers the pH even more to give that nice, real tart sort of tang. And the rhubarb comes through really well. So the only thing that is a bit unfortunate is you don't really get the colour, that sort of red. If you hold it up to certain light, you get like a hint of pink, but you don't get too much of that red. It would be nice to have like a really red rhubarb beer, but the amount of juice or rhubarb that you need to add to do that will bring on the laxative effect of rhubarb.
I can feel it working already.
I was wondering what that limitation was.
Should we stop for a toilet break soon?
We've just found out what it is.
The scary thing is the fact that he knows that's a limit. Yeah, he's gone above it. So.
When you buy the rhubarb juice in a drum and you're doing experimentations, you're doing 50-50, you find out pretty quick where that laxative effect kicks in.
Especially when you're using someone else's brew house as well, right?
This is just experimenting at home. At least it's at home. This is probably a little bit below borderline of laxative effect, but
we'll let you know in a
little
more
bit than enough to get that real nice tart rhubarb character, real tartness to it. I'm really happy with this beer, and there's only like two kegs still kicking around, one of which is here.
Thank you.
There's a beautiful freshness to it too, which I really enjoy. I'm just sitting here and this is fantastic because it's got such life and with the rhubarb, it's very, very good. So well done, mate.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Any thoughts?
Yeah, what do you guys reckon about? Anyone? Just a at the back there. Yeah. It is helping my hangover significantly, I must say.
So this was actually our Gabs beer this year, and we did it for Gabs, and whilst it was everything I wanted it to be, when you sample it in those little tiny cups and everything else, between what you had before it and what you had after it, you don't really get the impact of the rhubarb and the tartness of it. It's only when you have it in a bit more quantity on its own that you appreciate some of that, which is... I did it for Gabs as a wedge beer between if you went from Imperial Stout to, I don't know, a pale ale or something.
It's like
else.
A palate cleanser.
Something a bit
almost.
Of a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
But the format of Gabs didn't really mean that it got used that way. So
a thimble of cleanser. Yeah.
I think I actually started with that in Gabs, a full glass of that. So I think I did the right thing.
Look at the lacing on the glass.
Question. We have a question.
Oh, just speaking of Gabs, actually, what is the consideration that goes into brewing a beer for Gabs? Because I get a feeling that now you can't just... Brewers aren't just going like, oh, we'll just brew a really good beer. Like, they're thinking, like, they're brewing different beers for Gabs than they would brew normally. So, like, for going to festivals like Gabs, what's the mindset for going through those beers?
We were sitting at the pub and we had about 20 minutes to decide. So, yeah, and that's all that happened. But no, you're right, you do have to brew... I suppose we only had our first one this year, but you got to brew something that's going to catch people's attention. It's going to be pretty out there. It seems to be the trend to throw anything and everything you can at a beer. It's a bit of fun, I think, on a brewer's perspective, because, you know, we're making core beers and our normal beers every day. It's always good to have an opportunity to brew something pretty out there that you've always wanted to kind of throw some things together, I guess.
So yours was the Barbe Noire?
Yep.
An Imperial...
Black Belgian... Double IPA, 10.4%.
Did anyone in the crowd have that? Yeah. The Gabs, yeah. Yep. Thoughts?
Yep. Hello, we are Pirate Life and we do big ass beers.
Bam!
Drop the microphone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was one of my favourites in Gabs.
For me, it's an interesting question because obviously you do have, like you say, Doc, a thimbleful to try and catch somebody's attention, and obviously you want to get that. The prestigious award of having the beer of the festival, but often these beers, the ones that do catch people's attention, get rebrewed. So you do end up having to do them over and over again. And then they're served in larger serving sizes, and, you know, there's a consideration of the cost that goes into the beer. So, you know, maybe there's a bit, is there a bit of a, you know, conflict there in terms of trying to catch attention and thinking, well, maybe this needs to be a longer term thing as well?
It's a catch-22. If you're brewing to get best of show and get that recognition as part of the event, then you've just got to go insane. So something that you couldn't, if you can't drink that much of it in a session, then bam, it's a winner, because it's just that intensity of flavor. You get it in the small shot. It is what it is.
And, well, I mean, and Hendo did that this year, right? Like,
exactly.
He went out to win the People's Choice and brewed a beer to do that.
So if you're doing So then it comes down to commercial viability afterwards,
which is another story.
You've also got about viability of what it's costing you to do for the event as well. So the event will pay a certain amount per keg. So if you enter a 5% beer, you're getting paid the same amount for a keg as if you enter 10% beer.
Yeah.
So if you're using it as a platform to sort of announce yourself and everything, that's fantastic. It does it fantastically. If you want the beer to be an ongoing piece, then there's limited appeal for that. Probably the one that's gone on to be probably the most is probably the Lacerine
Praline.
Praline is probably the one that has done that.
Kind of matters pretty popular still as well.
Yeah, Zephyr was the very first beer I did for Gabs when it was still at the two brew pubs, the two pubs in 2011, I think it was. So Zephyr is still part of our core range. Plasma was one we did, I think, the year after that, and they're the only two that are still part of our core lineup. Everything else has been.
It's funny how like different brewers can use Gabs in very different ways. Like, you can use it to launch a beer that's not necessarily the best beer for Gabs, but can be a really good beer and use that as a launching platform, or you can just have a bit of a stab or brew a beer. I think Gabs is like, you can have a bit of a miss at Gabs and it's not as bad as releasing something outside of Gabs that doesn't quite work.
So the other ones that come to mind are Karma Citra and Watermelon Warhead.
Yeah,
they were
exactly.
Both Gabs beers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it goes out to the punter as well. Is the punter going there for the most wild extreme beer, or are they going there for just a really good beer? What they're searching for.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, Gabs is almost like the preview of what's going to be happening in the year to some degree, because a lot of those beers, like, yeah, people do use as a launching platform, and you can sort of see what's going to come up. But yeah, and like, what about, was it Umami Monster from Garage Project? Like, no one wants that to be a year-round release beer. You're a sick, sick man.
So the one other thought that does go through my head is if I do this again, how viable is it to do it again?
Yeah, of course.
And if you look at Taco...
It's at the Taco Syndrome, yeah.
Or even Milk and Two Sugars.
Yeah.
Was it 4,000 shots of coffee?
Something ridiculous. And then there was cold drip coffee on top of that as well.
The limes from the Taco?
Yeah.
They're a high labour intensive beers to produce.
That's what backpackers are for, man.
Yeah. But anyone who's like run a bar before can attest, like, limes are fucking expensive, man. Like, and to buy those limes just to use the zest is ridiculous. But yeah.
So can you source large quantities of the raw materials to do that beer as a regular ongoing thing? So limes, yes, but it's seasonal. Coffee, it's a bit easier, but, you know, coffee's expensive and as well, so it is what it is.
And also, like, the labour of getting some poor smuck to, like, make that many shots as he's doing his normal day service is ridiculous. Like, yeah.
Is that why we haven't seen another Squid Ink beer made again?
Squid Ink is easy to get. It comes from Spain. The labour's cheap.
When they're not having a nap, yeah.
The squid is plentiful.
Was there a question in the crowd that we missed?
I was just going to say that you said that it's for two things, you know, like the outrageous stuff or the seeing what's coming up in the year ahead.
Yeah.
Do you think that's exclusive? Like, is it like the beer version of Fashion Week? You know, like, Fashion Week runways are, like, outrageous. You'd never see anyone wearing those clothes, but it still sets the...
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Like, you can use... It's a great medium. It's just getting everyone's attention at one point at one time. How you choose to use that is up to the brewer, I think. And it's... Without getting too salesy, like, it's the marketing behind it. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's a really good... you're getting everyone paying attention at one time, so you can do some really cool things.
Have you been to Fashion Week?
Do I look like I've been to Fashion Week? that. I don't think they let you in thongs. So.
Unless you're ironic.
I could, yeah, get passed off as a mad designer or something, yeah.
I think from my perspective as a hardened beer nerd, I'm really pleased that Gabs exists and that it does give that platform for brewers to, you know, do something a bit outrageous. Ones that maybe aren't that inclined to do so, you know, really are encouraged to do that. And I'm really, you know, it's my favourite time of the year to have these beers. And the fact that they do end up kind of more mainstream and rebrewed, and, you know, more often than not, the ones that finish in the top two or three will appear in the top of the Hottest 100 as well. So, you know, it shows that people do sit up and pay attention to them.
So you guys got the call up late. If you had 20 minutes to decide what you're going to do before they were closing the...
No, we're just not very organised.
Right, because for the rest of us, it's usually just before Christmas. You're trying to wind down the year. You're getting into Christmas and everything else. And the guys go, okay, Gabs is coming up. We need a submission from you. We need to know what sort of style you want to do, what you're going to call it, what's going to be, how's it going to fit, what's going to do, everything else. And you've got to come up with something... Something that you are passionate about, actually making something you want to brew, whatever. You haven't, it's a concept that you haven't thought through fully. You got to submit it, and you got to submit it early so that the position in that sort of style or genre or whatever you cement. Because if everyone wants to do quadruple barrel aged imperial stouts with such and such, then they'll say, you know, we've already got four of those, you got to choose something else.
Yeah.
So you want to get sort of in a bit early, but as a concept that gives you enough room to maneuver around the concept of what you want to do. So you're doing these slightly ambiguously vague concepts of what it is without committing yourself to a corner, because that becomes what goes in the guide, what goes in everything else, the range of alcohol percentage, everything else.
Well, ours was sitting as a Cascadian dark ale, which it wasn't anything like that.
But also, I think when the boys were developing that recipe outside the Gilbert Street Hotel, we didn't even have a brewery, so it was...
That's what throws a spanner in the works a little bit.
It was a bit hard.
I think mine was a tart, refreshing vegetable ale or something like that.
So you just keep it, like, broad as hell. Is it the type of thing where, like, you come up with the concept then figure out afterwards how you could actually make that beer?
No, so... In your mind, you have an idea of what it's going to look like and taste like, but you've got to describe it in a way that's ambiguous enough to give you room to maneuver when you actually do it and still fit the brief.
So that said, have you now got that concept without asking you to tell us what it is?
But you can if you want to.
For 2016.
Yeah. It's October.
Yeah.
That's November.
Okay. Fair enough.
But you're already scaring me.
So I think we might take a bit of a halftime break. Sure. So there's some food going around. So I think we'll take a quick break for about 10 minutes.
Let that rhubarb work ya.
Yeah. Maybe it already is. I don't know. Maybe that's why we need to take a break. But yeah, so we'll take a quick break. So let's chill out for a little bit.
Sessionable.
Yeah. Big hand for Willie, man. Yeah.
Big Willie.
Yeah, big thank you for Willie for assisting us in putting this on in our total disorganisation and doing this. I think we actually got this totally sorted probably yesterday. so a big thank you. Yeah, about 10 minutes ago for recording to Willie.
Pretty much.
Yeah, a big thank you for giving us the space here and providing us amazing food as well, and just being an upright top legend. So cheers to Willie.
Cheers, Willie. It's not the only event on here this week. Adrian, do you want to tell us a bit more about the event that's coming up later this week?
Yeah, what do you guys got going on?
So we've got an event on Friday called Where's the Funk Mother Pucker?
You had to concentrate to get that one out, didn't you?
I'm which so is pleased a, you said that slowly.
Which is a name that I wish I came up with. So I'm going to give props to Willie for that one. So it's five funky beers and four courses match with it. Smoked meats and cheeses, you know, that thing. Nothing too fancy.
Are you announcing the beers?
Yeah, rumour has it there's a very special beer among the...
Yeah, so we've got the first release of Doctor's Orders and Funk Estate Dr. Funk.
Nice.
Which, what is it, Doc?
It's a sour citrus ale. It's Berliner Weiss with yuzu and black lime.
That sounds amazing.
We may also have a aged beer from 2 Meter Tall, we may also have one of my favourite beers, Rodenbach Grand Cru.
Is this all pending delivery, or because you're being very vague at the moment?
We may also have Hop Dog Alluvial Peach as well. And serum.
And serum.
Oh, double fisting. All right.
Double dog.
Two events, three beers.
So yeah, that's Friday night. It's how many tickets left, Willie? Four? Four left. So
you can all Rochambeau for him at the front afterwards.
I hand-mulled back the Dr. Funk from New Zealand last weekend. Weekend before. It's on a boat to Australia, which won't land for a couple of weeks. So this is the very first early release.
How many kegs are we going to see floating around? Is it going to be
There'll be no kegs. It's no. All it's all packaged only. We couldn't get any one-way kegs to the brewery in time for packaging day. So the only thing that's come to Australia is 500ml bottles.
So there's going to be a fair bit of that there, or?
Enough to do a thin spread across all the craft
So you, we'll shops. Be able to find it quickly.
Yep.
We'll come on to your New Zealand trip a bit more in a moment, but we realise we've got about an hour in and we haven't given anything away yet, and Adrian's itching to debut his competition, so...
he's been working on this one for a while, I think.
For a while, as in I came up with it last night.
Yeah. Well, it's sessionable a while, like it's all in scale, right?
So we've got this lovely Doctor's Orders shirt to give away.
Kindly donated by a man down the other side of the room.
So the awesome series of shit. Where are we?
Give everyone a look.
Yeah. If you look closely, the four colours on the outline are the four primary seasonals that we do. The blue, the crimson, the yellow and the green.
Nice.
If I had to explain it, you're not paying attention.
Oh, that's what it is.
So, Adrian, tell us how this is going to work.
So, basically, I'm going to read... we're going to read a few statements, and Doc has to figure out which one is true, and whoever he picks, even if he's wrong or right, picks a name out of a hat, and somebody gets a prize. So, it's not really much of a competition, but...
Who's already confused?
Basically, we're just going to tell you who wins a prize.
Do you want to draw the name first?
Basically, somebody wins a prize.
Draw the name first.
All right, so...
Let Doc draw it.
Let Doc draw it. So whoever... Doesn't matter.
So I'm allowed to look at it,
if
right?
If he gets it wrong, this person wins a prize.
So Mark Williams.
Redraw. No, Jackie.
Kiwi Mafia.
So pretty much, you've won the shirt.
I call shenanigans on that one. What's going on down there?
All right, so, Doc. Your nickname is Doc, obviously. You run Doctor's Orders. But how much do you know about General Hospital, the soap opera?
I know of it.
We're each going to read out a scenario from a soap opera.
Is this the Muppets edition of General Hospital?
Not quite.
Because that was more fun.
So each of these scenarios happened, and you have to tell us which one is from General Hospital instead of another soap. I'll start. Option one. A character was too poor to hire a regular nurse to take care of her mother, so she hired an orangutan who then ended up falling in love with another character in the show. Brad, your turn.
This is a 1980s series, right?
Scenario two. A character suffering from breast cancer was miraculously cured after she had a sexy dream involving a recently married friend.
And the third one. A man had his wife cloned when he thought she died in a plane crash, but it turned out she didn't die, and when she showed up again, the clone tried to kill her.
It's got to be number three. It has to be number three.
It's actually number two.
Oh! Doesn't matter, Mark, you still win the prize.
So congratulations, Mark, for...
Come up and grab your prize.
Not mate. Doing anything.
Yeah. Best competition ever.
Are you a large or a medium? That's a large. I can swap it for a medium if you're a medium. All right.
Cool. So, Doc... you touched on that you'd just come back from New Zealand. How was your trip?
Oh, it was fantastic. Yeah, a nice 4-day escape with my lovely wife.
So more pleasure than...
It was...
What's going on here?
I'm not looking for details, just...
Yeah, it was actually my wife's birthday and our wedding anniversary, so we try and escape every year for a few days and go somewhere just to chill.
So you also made a pretty big life announcement at the same time, Doc?
Yes, I did.
Do you want to elaborate or no? You don't have to.
I've been working for an IT company for the entire time I've been in Australia, which is just on 19 years. My last day with them was Friday. Wow. This week. So I've is not quite as I wanted it to be as a launch into full-time beer, but I've taken another role with a small upcoming company as a lead for them, which will give me my mornings and nights back to do a bit more of the beer stuff. I was in a global R&D role with the previous company, and the hours and the work-life balance was becoming an issue where I wasn't being able to spend enough time doing all the cool planning stuff for all the stuff that I've got planned for Doctor's Orders. So that was one of the reasons that I left. I'd also achieved everything within that company that was there to achieve, so it was time to sort of move on. So yeah, so hopefully the next 12 months will, there's a number of projects in play. Most of them, bar one, will be out in market within the next 12 months. There's one that will take a little bit longer, and I'll have a bit more time to actually make sure it happens as I want.
Awesome. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
So does this equal more bigger and better things for Doctor's Orders because there's more time for you to invest in it?
The ability to innovate in beer is becoming a little bit more difficult than it was sort of 5-6 years ago when there wasn't much as a benchmark. So now to be still seen as part of innovating in craft beer, you need to just sort of keep on top of it, and everything gets a little bit more complex, a little bit more... a lot more planning involved. So the projects I've got in play, one we're about to do in a couple of weeks has been in planning for 12 months. Another one's been in planning already for 6 months and won't see light of day for another 12 to 18. Wow. That's sort of like to again, still stay at the pointy end of seeing to be innovative, but doing something cool and interesting that we love. Yeah, the ideas are still fresh. They're still coming, so I'm still passionate about it. But yeah, it's not a have a thought, make it happen, and then expect it to be what you want it to be when there's so many people that are innovating and doing interesting stuff.
Yeah, you've been collaborating quite a lot lately as well. You've done the Dr. Funk and the Dr. Shedlove as well. Is that something you're enjoying, the collaborations?
Yeah, so this year has been a bit of a transitional year. One is I was in that day job of a global R&D role, which was really, really prohibitive in some of my time. But also the last 12 months, we've transitioned into packaged product being in bottles. So still doing draft, then doing packaged product, getting out and about. We started to export as well. So getting all that and make sure that was happening right was the priority. So the ability to also do mid-seasonals on top of the festival beers and special releases wasn't possible logistically. So we pulled the mid-seasonals and we didn't do those, but we filled the gap with doing collaborative beers. So we've done the Dr. Funk, which is landing here shortly. We did the Dr. Shedlove with the guys from Big Shed in Adelaide. That's sold out. I don't think any of it's still around. We've done one in the UK called Isotope, which has landed here last week. That'll be out and about in relatively short supply in draft and bottles. It's a 10% wee heavy with bog myrtle, metal sweet, whiskey aged and something else in it as well. It's crazy multi-layered. That's with Atom. Okay. In the UK. And we've got one which we're brewing in a couple of weeks, which should be out before Christmas. And that one I'm really excited about. It's pretty crazy, pretty out there. I'm not telling too much about it, but It'll be out for your Christmas hampers.
Excellent.
So just a quiet couple of months then, eh, Doc?
Yeah, yeah, just take it easy.
Just chillaxing,
I would love my Christmas hampers to come with Doctor's Orders beers. Like, if Crisco did Doctor's Orders, I would, like, totally subscribe to that.
You subscribe to Crisco already?
Well, you know.
So we've got a new beer in front of us. So we might...
Yeah, do you want to tell us about that, Liam?
Oh, okay. So as everyone can hopefully read the labels still at this stage, we've got the Feral Karma Citra. Kindly donated us from Jackson and the boys from Feral, so big shout out to those guys. Thank you very much. So it's a beer that's just recently come into their core range, and I think it's a pretty cool move having a big ballsy black IPA in your core range available at, like, a pretty decent price as well. But, I mean, I'm a big fan of this beer. What are you guys around the table? What are your thoughts?
Huge fan.
Love it. Yeah. Love it. It's a big IPA, big hoppy beer, but also a massive malt character as well, which is something you don't always get with the black IPAs. And yeah, I think it's great. I think it stands out. I think Dot mentioned as well it was a former Gabs beer, one of the former ones that have stuck around and become a core range beer, and rightly so.
I think it was probably the second year Gabs, and we'd done an Ale Stars session at the Tap House with Brendan, and the first Gabs that was going to be at the Royal Exhibition Hall was coming up, and they didn't know what they wanted to make, so he just took ideas from the audience on that night, and one of the pundits came up with a name, was like, you know, Karma Citra, and it's like, done. And that was the beer, and now
we're sitting here
3 years on. It's now and now I'm packaged as well. It's amazing.
It has a slightly obscene label as well. I love how they've gotten rid of the thing by self-censoring it. Deliberately.
I've seen some way more offensive labels than this, by the way. Has anyone seen it? It like Armiga do like a milk stout, and it's like an African lady breastfeeding a child on the front of it? I think that's pretty raw. Way to bring that in the mood, Liam. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely in terms of wrongness, this is not up there, but I think it's pretty funny.
What do you make of it, Jack? Is black IPA is something that you're thinking of bringing in for Pirate Life?
I love the style. It's not on our agenda for the next probably 6 to 12 months, but I'm a big fan of it, and they obviously do it very well. We originally looked at one, bringing it on. I'm not sure what happened to it.
Became Barb Noir.
Yeah, I suppose that was our take on it, yeah.
What about you, Mick? Is this a style of beer you normally like to drink? Are you a big hop fiend as well, or is it where do you sort of sit on the agenda?
Yeah, no, having spent 4 years in the US, I'm a massive hop fan. So high ABV, good quality beers, right up my alley.
Yeah, nice. What sort of beers were you, is that off topic? What sort of beers were you sort of into before you went to the States? Were you a craft drinker, or was it sort of the US that sort of gave you that rite of passage?
I reckon I drank more Corona than any other human being. So.
By choice?
No, we're actually, if you go back in history, then you probably still remember a beer called Sol, which was also another Mexican beer. Yeah. And
I still have a bit of a soft spot for Sol, I must say.
Yeah, our good mate was the Sol distributor in WA, so we developed a drinking club called the Sol Racing Team. So we were fully sponsored by Sol. So we had Sol hats, caps, watches, jackets, boots, the whole work. So
Hump Day Hoarders, take note.
The left bank hotel down in Frio was selling more Sol than any other pub in Australia at that time. So.
But it was all comp, right? It was all sponsored.
It was very cheap. But I think, you know, like everybody, we all have wow moments when it comes to our journey through craft beer, and we were lucky that we were able to do that in America. You know, we moved there in 2006 or 2005.
Were you in San Diego area as well? Out of all the places in the States, you're like right smack bang in the middle of it.
Yeah, and I was importing Coopers and BrewDog at the same time, so not only to be able to work through the US with such a great quality brand as Coopers, but also working with James and Martin. They started in 2007, bought their first beer into the US in 2008. And I remember the day I started importing their beer, and James rang me. He said, "You're on a plane to Scotland next Sunday. You're coming over for a week." So that was fine. So I hopped off over there, got up to the brewery at Fraserburgh, and they had a little 10-hex system, Jack, was it? The first one?
20.
20 hex system, and you had to hop into the the mash tun to clean it out. So I got there at 9 o'clock in the morning, and James said, "Here's a pair of shorts. Strip off. You're going straight in." So you know, I was weighing at a lazy 100 kilo, and had to. It was about 73 degrees inside, so it was a fairly interesting experience. So that was my take on my first experience in craft beer. So
sessionable.
We're going to try something. It's probably not going to work because we are sessionable. But we have Mr. Thomas Evans on Skype. We're going to try and get him in to the audience. Everyone has to make a shitload of fun of him because it's Tom. Come on. But do you want to see if we can get this working?
There is no way this is going to work, by the way.
I'm putting money on
do no. Do not get your hopes up.
Can you hear me?
Tom, can you hear us?
Hey, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Hello, Tom. No, louder.
Turn it up, Lee.
Take off your lion costume. We can't hear you.
No. It's a bear costume, but...
Ah, it's a bear costume. I think that's just your beard, mate.
How's it going?
Yeah, good. We're on to beer number three. Woo! Excellent. Everything's going well. How's Germany treating you?
Wish I could be there. In the morning, but I'm drinking a Schlenkerla Rauch beer because I figure I'm going to have some bacon this morning for breakfast.
Sounds like a good breakfast beer.
I thought it was the best on offer. But yeah, otherwise Germany's pretty awesome. There's some cool beer here.
Please elaborate.
Yeah. Thanks for it. Right, thanks for that insightful comment.
Nice haircut, Tom.
I mean, obviously, there's just lager everywhere, and here in Bavaria, lots of Weiss beer as well. But there's also a lot of really cool craft breweries opening up. So we've got a few around where I live making some nice stuff. One of them got their beer banned because it was a milk stout, and that is very un-German. So they're not allowed to sell it in Germany.
Is that like a Reinhardsker Bolt thing? Or
yeah, pretty much.
I thought you could still do whatever you want now.
Yeah.
Not in Bavaria. You can't.
Oh, okay. So that's why Stone are opening in Berlin?
They are. But yeah, I think it's to do with... because it's a milk stout. So it's what they're adding to the beer makes it... apparently it's against the law. And so they have to export all the bottles because they couldn't sell it in Germany.
Ooh, lactose.
Yeah, lactose. They don't like it in their beer in Germany. It's just funny. It's the
no fun police came down, or what's the deal?
Yeah, basically. Although, yeah, I mean, there's less fun police here than there is in Australia. But
I remember when I went to Berlin, I couldn't cross the road without the green light being on.
No, it's like Melbourne.
Yeah, well, that's right.
It's like Melbourne, apparently, Tom.
When Adrian and I were in Belgium, I waited for every pedestrian crossing light to turn green because that's what Germans do. And you get yelled at if you don't wait. It's crazy.
And I almost got run over by bicycles.
It's early in the morning, guys. So, yeah.
See, we're sitting here having a Karma Citra.
I'm very jealous.
Suck it.
How much are you missing us, Tom? And or are you now a complete German convert?
Oh no! I'm missing you guys. And I think this week's going to be especially hard watching all the tweets coming in from Sydney Craft Beer Week. I can't wait to get back. I can't wait to get back. Try the Pirate Life beers. I haven't had any because
what a sucker! Look at this guy.
They're shocking. They're no good, man.
And Doc, I haven't had a summer without Zephyr for a long time, and so this last summer was tough.
Brewing it again in 2 weeks, out beginning December.
I'll still probably miss it. But
we'll take photos, dude. Don't worry.
Oh, thanks, man. That's great. They tuned you untapped. Adrian mulled me up a few beers, so I do have. I was wondering whether or not to have it this morning for breakfast, but I do have a liter Cannamal of the Mountain Goat Barrel Breed Barley Wine.
Yeah, it's macro beer anyway, so yeah.
I like that.
Tip it down the sink, mate.
Yeah, it's crappy. Don't you have a 4X pail?
Well, the question was, do you have a case of 4X pail there with you?
No, I already drank the 4X pail.
Why, because it's running out soon?
I'm not even kidding. That's not even a joke.
Now, we started off with another round of Mountain Goat Summer Altinis, so...
Yeah,
So you've got one up there, mate.
I saw what my friend Adolf had to say about that.
Oh, by the way, Mum's here as well.
No, not my friend.
And so is Kenny.
Yeah, Kenny's here as well.
Well, that worked surprisingly well. I'm really impressed.
Can we give Lee a hand of applause to actually getting that working?
Particularly with on the big screen as well. Fantastic.
Yeah. Jumbotron. What time is it there, Tom?
8 o'clock in the morning.
8 o'clock, that's nothing.
That's really early
Sunday, though. It is, Tom, yeah.
Yeah, I woke up at 7 because I didn't know what time you guys were going to call me.
Tom, sorry. Having a Schlenkerl at 8 o'clock in the morning is not that big a deal, but him getting up to have one is the big deal, I think.
Exactly, that's right.
All right, well, we might let you go, but peace out and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on the podcast again, guys.
It's the last time, so we thought he'd just give you one more. So.
Cheers, Tom.
Yeah.
See you, Tom. And applause for Tom.
See you, guys.
Tom. Oh, so that's, we should probably let you know, that's Tom. He used to do the podcast with us, but he fucked off to Germany for a year, so we thought we'd give him this one.
Yeah, we probably should have told you that beforehand, right?
Yeah, yeah. I kind of realised that halfway through. I was like, oh, we'll just roll with it, whatever.
So, Mick, you were touching on your time in America. Just for those who aren't aware of the story of how Pirate Life came about, can you give us a brief overview of the setup and the history of the brewery?
Yeah, I think probably the journey started when I was working with Coopers and Brewdog, but I think more importantly it started when Jack finished high school. Jack did his high schooling in San Diego, year 9 through 12.
Greatest experience of my life.
And as a sort of a 6'2", half good looking, blonde headed Australian going to a co-ed high school, he was sort of living the world of...
He struggled, didn't he?
He was struggling a bit, and I thought, I've got to do something about this. So I rang James at Brewdog up, and I said, James, do you need... I knew they were a bit short on staff over this particular Christmas. It was the Christmas of 09. And I rang James up, and I said, do you need a spare pair of hands up there to work on the bottling line, do some cleaning? And he said, yeah, I'd love some. I said, can I send Jack up for 3 months? So after Jack, in the meantime, had a six-week tour of Europe on Top Deck with a mate from Perth. He rocked up at Fraserburgh and started brewing. So that was about the early November of 09. I got a phone call just before Christmas, and James rings me and said, Mick, we like Jack. We actually want to offer him a full-time job and teach him to be a brewer. So Jack rang me and we had a chat, and that decision was made. So Jack settled in at Fraserburgh. And I don't know whether anybody actually knows where Fraserburgh is, but it's...
It's middle of bumfuck nowhere, I believe.
It's as close to Podunk, Ohio, as you can possibly get to. So. It's about 45 minutes north of Aberdeen, right on the northeast tip of Scotland. It is cold, it's grey, it's miserable, and it's a pretty tough town. So Jack rocked up there at the age of 18. And about 3 or 4 weeks later, out of the blue, Martin Dickey says to him, I want you to go down to the train station in Aberdeen and pick up another bloke from Australia. So that was Red. So Red had met Martin at Christmas time while Martin was visiting his brother in Perth. And Martin read the job as a brewer up at Brewdog. So Jack picked him up from the train station. And at that stage, they were living in a boarding house with a wonderful Scottish woman and her family. And
there's a story behind that somewhere.
With a couple of, they were 4 bedrooms upstairs, 1 shower, and all the brewers, Brewdog had this policy about bringing brewers in from around the world, and so that's where they settled. And in those days, the work regime at Brewdog was 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, so Jeez. It was 12-hour shifts from 6 in the morning till 6 at night, and continued on from there. But if you also know that part of Scotland, during winter you don't see a lot of sunlight. So I think Jack said to me, he said he went for 23 days straight without ever seeing any sunlight. So
I wasn't working on my tan.
Any tan we get when you like just don't shower from like bottling stouts all day.
I think at the same time we'd finished our time in America, and James and Martin asked me to go to Aberdeen and build their first pub for them. I rocked up into Aberdeen, and James said, yeah, I've got a flat for you, mate, got everything organised, so we'll pick you up from the airport. So I got picked up from the airport by one of the boys from the brewery and taken to this flat. It was 5 stories up, no lift. And I walked in, there's not a piece of furniture. There's nothing. James, what's happened to the furniture? Oh, no, mate, too busy. You have to go and buy yourself a bed. So out I went and bought some furniture and away it went. So while I was building the pub, the boys were brewing away, and every weekend they'd come down to Aberdeen, and I got to know, I got to not only appreciate Jack's development as a brewer, but I really got to understand Red as a friend and as a mate, but also as somebody that's really passionate and really talented about brewing. So I was there for about 6 months. I thought I'd better come back home and see my wife, so I left the boys there, and that was it. So when the boys were on a 2-year visa, so that when that finished, Jack was the first to go, so he wanted to go and have a holiday with his mates back in the US. So I said, before you go, just do me one favour, ring Little Creatures and see if they've got a job for you. So he took about a month to make that phone call, but eventually it was eventually it was made, and they did a Skype interview with him, and they said, what day do you arrive back in Australia? And he said, oh, it's Friday the 10th of September. He said, okay, well, you'll be starting work on Monday the 13th. So, and that, I'll let Jack talk a bit of that, his journey with BrewDog and Creatures. Red came back a little while later, and he'd got a position to develop Cheeky Monkey. So Cheeky Monkey Brewery down in Margaret River, when he started there, was a piece of dirt. They ended up building a 400-seat restaurant and the brewery. So it was a good experience for him to not only to be able to develop his own recipes and develop his style as a brewer, but also go through the pains of building a brewery. So Jack had 4 years nearly at Creatures. Red did the same thing at Cheeky Monkey, and in that time, Red used to come to town a lot and start our place, and we tasted some of the best beers in the world. You know, the boys would go; they got to know the bottle shops around our area, and we had a wonderful period of time where, you know, at least once every couple of weeks, we were drinking some of the greatest beers that have ever been made. So we got to understand. Well, I got to understand the passion the boys had for brewing. And Jack said to me one day, he said, Dad, I wouldn't mind a brewery by the time I'm 25. And I said, yeah, well, keep dreaming, mate, and get back to work. So, but then I started to realise that, you know, the quality of both the brewers was something that needed to be harnessed. So I had a good mate of mine. We had a chat about it and put a business plan together. And then last year we signed the lease. November last year we signed the lease on the property in Adelaide. And I'll stop there so I could keep talking, but I'll...
Yeah, I said brief.
Doesn't exist.
So what about you, Jack? What's the view for you for getting it all started?
It's been a pretty wild ride, to be honest.
Yeah?
Obviously, yeah. I had the BrewDog experience and the Creatures experience, which was really good. Kind of got to see both sides of the beer world. When we were up at BrewDog, we were just straight cowboys, everything we did.
So Fraser Beg, was that the second, the bigger brewery?
No, this is the first one.
Yep.
Yeah, before they built the 100 hectolitre
gotcha.
System.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Fraserburgh was the heroin capital of Scotland. We had a needle exchange next to the brewery. It was an interesting place to live.
So it's pretty much like every brewery in Sydney at the moment, actually. Yeah.
But yeah, kind of learning from one of the best brewers in the world, Marden, and they had a really good team up there.
Yeah.
A lot of guys, international, it was quite an international team. I think there was only probably two Scottish guys that actually worked there.
Yeah, wow.
Germans, Americans, Indians, that was really good. I went there as a shit kicker, and I didn't even drink craft beer at that point.
Yeah.
Living in the States, I was drinking 30 packs of Coors Light for $13.
So. Boo. that's really good value.
Hey, man, it's cheap.
That's
when you're
really
in
good
school.
Value.
But they're in cans, right?
Of course, mate.
Only
quality beer.
Fresh as best.
But yeah, so I learned a fair bit up there, and then going to Creatures, I got to go see that big side of brewing, where kind of consistency, efficiency, and specs is what you're focused on.
Yeah,
and I'm super stoked that I did get to see both sides of the beer world, because I've take what I've learned at BrewDog, and you know we learned to use hops very well up there.
Yeah.
As everyone knows BrewDog's pretty hop heavy on their beers. And then kind of taking from Creatures, you know,
that efficiency and
the
that.
Efficiency, the consistency, and making sure every beer that goes out your door tastes pretty similar.
Yeah, awesome.
And you know, lab skills and what we invested a bit of money into our lab for Pirate Life.
So that's a pretty big call, because I mean, like, it sort of seems like the year 2 or 3 mark is when breweries in Australia start looking at lab work and all that stuff. So coming straight off the bat,
yeah, and I think again that's just based off working at Creatures.
Yeah.
I knew if we're going to do this thing, we want to do it properly straight off from the get-go.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just little bits and pieces like a DO2 meter and a CO2 meter, water bath to do VDK tests, a microscope to get your yeast counts consistent. Yeah. Nothing major.
Has anyone got the tech bell?
I've got a wish list about a mile long for lab equipment, but it's not cheap stuff.
Well, with tanks, you can sort of tack on one more thing each time, hopefully. That's it, I mean, like, there's no doubt that you guys are a very hop forward brewery. How early down the line was that sort of? Was that a conscious decision, or is it a conscious decision, or and where sort of did that take point if it did?
I think we're just making beers
that you want to drink.
We like to drink.
Yeah,
yeah, and you know, it's big inspiration from West Coast America. Living there, I did drink a bit of it, and then working with the Brewdog.
Well, between
guys,
that and Brewdog, like, yeah, shit.
But, you know, they kind of followed in Stone's footsteps a fair bit. So that's a big inspiration. And, yeah, it just comes down to beers we want to drink on a daily basis.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to make, really.
And do you think that's something I would carry on or through? Or
yeah,
to leave
the core range will always be hop-forward beers.
Yeah.
We'll be releasing an IPA in December.
Nice.
Kind of fit between the pale and the double IPA. But it would go to the kind of opposite end of the hop spectrum, whereas most of our beers are that kind of sticky, dank US hops. The IPA, we want to use kind of more New Zealand side, quite fruity, fresh hops. And then the specialty beers, that's where we'll kind of go away from
have
the hops
a
little
fun.
Bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One question I always thought, and like, this is not a dig at all, but like, double IPA, 8.8% in a big fuck off Tallboy can.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, I'm not saying there is. I love it. I mean, it's the
and
ultimate roadie.
And it's a black can.
Yeah. It's the ultimate roadie for, like, when you're walking down to the pub or something.
Yeah.
Not that I do that, by the way. But, yeah, like, so where was the decision to do the different size cans come into play?
I suppose we looked at the double IPA. Well, initial thoughts, just big beer, big can.
Yeah.
That was our philosophy on it.
So it's not a sharing can, is it?
Well, it can be. Oh. Yeah.
If you're that way inclined, I guess, yeah.
But yeah, I suppose you look at a lot of breweries when they do their big beers, and there's quite a few bottles sitting around on the table that are that 650ml, 750ml bottle, and that's normally your 7% plus beers that are made for sharing. So that was one aspect of it, that it's a beer. Most people do just go solo on it and have a bloody good time.
But I have, yeah.
it's a beer that, yeah, you can sit down and have one or two and actually split it with someone. And
yeah.
We didn't think it would have the same impact in a smaller can.
No, I agree. Yeah, yeah.
One of the interesting things is when we built the brewery, we were having a beer somewhere one day, and I said to the boys, What's the first beer we're going to make? And collectively, I don't think they'd thought about it, but within about a nanosecond, double IPA. So it was the first beer to come off the brew kit, which was it was a good challenging beer to get to start rocking out with.
It definitely puts you on the mark. Rocking that out straight away. I mean, one of the first things I heard about Pirate Life was looking there. I think Crafty Pint had this really weird photo of the cutout of the top of your can with the recipe idea. Yeah. Where did that come to that? Because I think that's amazing, by the way.
You can thank the grey-headed blokes next
this guy.
To me for that
it was one of those, again, a lot of our decisions were made over a beer. So we're sitting around having a beer one day, and I'm looking at a can. I'm not sure whose can I was looking at, but I was looking at it and just thinking we're developing our designs. And I sort of, that to me just looked like wasted space. So I said to the boys, we were playing around with some timelines, which was a recipe and the brewing process for our website. And I said, what do you think of the idea of just putting that timeline around the top of the can? And they didn't disagree. So we've got a creative designer in Melbourne. So I rang her and said, look, what do you think about this? She said, well, let me design it and shoot it off to Aurora, who does our cans, and see whether they can do it from a practical point of view. They came back and said there's no drama. So it's now sort of, hopefully become synonymous with Pirate Life. Because,
yeah.
And part of that also was the journey that, I learned in America is, the craft beer world's very collaborative. I want to, we as a brewery have that situation that we want to make, we want to be very open. And we want to be, as transparent as we can with our beers and our philosophies. And I think part of that is sharing the recipe, having it there for people to see. And the good thing I like about it is you can actually get educated while you get pissed. So it's not bad. But, it's just one of those things that came, over having a cold beer and a bit of a chat.
It's funny because you look at a can that doesn't have it. It's like this wasted space in that can almost. I think the other thing as well, it's like, because it's putting the point that I think I like people who are really openly saying about their recipes and, like, the skill's not in developing the recipe, it's how you brew the beer. And like, you know, it's like, I like seeing brewers who like, if you want to brew the beer, here's a recipe, have a crack. Yeah. But like, doesn't mean you're going to be the same thing that I got. But yeah.
So we got the fourth beer in front of us. It's the Pirate Life Double IPA, 8.8% alcohol.
Just
by
a light one, yeah.
So we've quite nightcap. We've saved the big one to the end. Jack, do you want to tell us about the beer?
Again, yeah, as Mick said, this is the first one we put through the brew house. Again, that inspiration from America, big hoppy IPAs is what we were into, so we thought we'd go for a big ballsy double IPA. It's that kind of big, sticky, dank, piney US hops. What do we got? Centennial, Columbus, Simcoe and Mosaic. A really big malt profile in it as well, quite a simple malt profile, sorry. But I think the key with this beer, what we really wanted to do is, because a lot of big beers, when you start dealing with big alcohols, sometimes the alcohol can really blow you away, or the bitterness can blow you away too much, and it's the balance between the three components of the beer, which is the malt sweetness, the bitterness, and the alcohol. So you're getting all three aspects of it, but nothing's blowing away, so you can actually drink a few of them.
Yeah, I agree.
Way too easy to have more than one of these beers. Way too easy.
Got a couple of questions. You've only had two.
So the difference between your pale ale and the double IPA is pretty polarizing, because your pale ale in a glass looks like it should be a double IPA, and the double IPA looks like it should be a pale ale. So was there a goal as far as, you know, a visual effect with the beer in the glass?
That was a kind of conscious decision we made. With the pale ale, we wanted it to have a bit more of a malt profile there and a bit of colour. And with the double IPA, we wanted that malt sweetness there, but didn't want to put any crystal malts or carafas to get the colour and really let the hops shine. And it was kind of, you know, everyone does expect the double IPA to be the dark one. So
yeah,
it's kind of just do something a bit different.
Well,
yeah.
That's a good question, by the way.
It was a good question.
I've got like a really...
We have a front runner.
I've got a really ignorant question because I'm really bad at research.
And as if you didn't do any?
It probably says in your website, but why the name Pirate Life?
Unfortunately, I don't have a glamorous story to tell you all. we were throwing names around for 6 or 8 months and nothing ever stuck. So we kind of just said, look, boys, we'll... No one talk about names for the next couple of weeks, and we did that. And then for some unknown reason, overnight or in my dreams or when I woke up in the morning, it was the quote, "It's a pirate's life for me," that kind of popped in my head, and Pirate Life Brewing just came to me straight away. Called the old boy. This was 7 in the morning, just Pirate Life Brewing, and hung up the phone. called Red, Pirate Life Brewing, hung up the phone. They're going, what the fuck is he talking about?
He's off drops.
Haven't gone to sleep yet. And they got back to me in half an hour and said, yep, that's it. Let's stick with that. And I think it's kind of grown. When you're a startup, you don't really know what your brand is when you get going, but it's kind of grown as the name sits really well where we are now. Our philosophy on the beers we make, the life we kind of live, is just that pirate life where we're doing kind of what we want to do and how we want to do it.
Yeah, nice.
And you're based out of Adelaide. Obviously, you know, they've taken well to you there. It took you a bloody age to get up to New South Wales. We've all been waiting really patiently.
Don't hate
some,
us.
Some less than others, Brad.
I just wondered what the feedback was from some of the states around Australia. Has it differed much between states? How's New South Wales gone over the last few weeks for you guys?
I think, first of all, just touching on the New South Wales issue, is we, from probably day one, we've had issues with production, and we knew that we needed to have things a bit more settled to launch into New South Wales. We're still having issues with production, but we've got some new... we've got 3 new 100-hect ferment tanks, 100-hect tanks, fermenters coming in about 3 weeks. They're on the water. They left China last week with a 100-hect bright beer tank. So within about 4 or 5 weeks, a lot of those issues hopefully will be relieved. But we again, as part of our launch program, we've done tours in every state. So you know, in Sydney last weekend, we did 10 events in 4 days, which is
how good. Did you hold up after that? By the way,
I was a tad tired on the I was just a tad tired on the flight home, but
a cheeky nap, yeah.
But I think we've done 122 events since we launched the brewery, and that's That's just part of the our philosophy. Again, it's another lesson I learnt in America is very important to get beer into people's hands and get them to taste the product, because it's all, you know, it's about the product, and it's getting, you know, educating, not so much educating, but just getting people to try the beer. And so that's why we went down that train. As far as being received, I think everywhere's been pretty solid. Perth is probably a little bit ahead of everybody else in the sense that they're really moving forward. You know, and again, they've probably been around. Their culture is a bit more crafty in the sense of they've been doing it longer, and some of the great breweries of Australia have come out of there. But certainly, you know, we've been rapt at the way New South Wales, is, or particularly Sydney, has received us, and you know, we couldn't speak more highly of the quality of the drinkers. We've had some great conversations, met some great people, and it's like, you know, just being a doing things like this today. It's about, you know, for us, it's about passion and it's about quality. So you know, we're really thankful for that.
No, thank you guys.
And thank you very much. And where does the company go from here? You've pretty much cornered all of the metro markets now in Australia. Is you going to take it more regional? Are you got overseas aspirations? What's next?
I think it's really just from now until probably March is consolidation of sort of delivery and making sure that we can make enough beer to get around the country. We're going to duck up to Newcastle on Tuesday and Wednesday. Say good day to those guys. We're doing.
Prepare yourself for that one, by the way.
I've been warned. we're doing a little bit down in Tassie. We're getting a lot of phone calls out of Darwin, so we'll probably do something in the Northern Territory in the near future.
Awesome.
We've had a lot of inquiries from overseas, but it also comes back down to having the product. We'll have a look at maybe something next year, but I'd suggest now, between now and Christmas, and between now and March, it's probably just consolidation. We've got a couple of collaborations on the go. We've done a collaboration with a winery in the Barossa Valley called Tomfoolery. The boys have made a Cerveza Negra, which is a black Spanish lager, and that's now resting in some of the Tomfoolery Tempranillo barrels, and
that'd be awesome because that's an amazing wine. So
we tasted it on Wednesday. I think Ben Chipman, the winemaker, came down and we tasted it, and it's tasting pretty good. We were lucky enough to be invited by the Golden Era, which is the record label for the Hilltop Hoods. They asked us to brew a beer for them, so we got all those guys down to the brewery a few weeks ago and made a golden ale. They wanted a golden lager, but we sort of convinced them that
doesn't happen here, mate.
So that we launched that. There's a gig coming up on November 7th in Adelaide, so we'll launch that then. So we're big on doing collaborations, or our philosophy is to do collaborations with South Australian companies. I think.
Will there ever be a collaboration with BrewDog?
It's a very good question.
Yeah. Will they ever grace us with their presence again, or is James not allowed in the country anymore?
No, I think their global strategy is to take over the world, and obviously
they're doing pretty well at it. Yes.
I'm sure they'll get down here, but we're sort of our real focus for collaborations at the moment is within South Australia, and it's with perhaps, you know, more South Australian brands.
I mean, South Australia has some of the best produce coming out of this country, and it's such an amazing place to go visit, and you just gorge yourself and booze and food and wine and so I think it'll be a while before you run out of a list of people to play with, I reckon.
Very true.
I think Lee is eyeing up that bottle of Abstract and has a question of his own.
Is that allowed?
No.
The question is,
ask the question anyway.
The question is, you won't win it.
So Mick, you actually just mentioned about the overseas market. I was going to ask Doc, how's the overseas market going for you? Because you've been out for a while now, haven't you?
So we've done a little bit of export into Malaysia, New Zealand, and it's been a little bit sporadic. It's been tactical more than regular, ongoing sort of export orders. We've got a container that landed in the UK about 2 weeks ago in conjunction with Bridge Road and Nomad, and there's Craft Beer Rising next week. I think it's the end of next week in the UK, which it'll all be launched at. We've got distribution from Scotland right down to London with our beers there. So I'll be interested to see how that's received. We're in the final stages of locking in New Zealand for national distribution in New Zealand as well with our packaged product, which is looking good. And then, sort of Southeast Asia is also on the horizon. It's more about just sort of trying to build a bit more of a global brand. Local works really well when you have a brewery. When you don't have a brewery, you got to build a brand around other methods. And
does that mean a lot of traveling for you as well in the future?
It means a lot of holidays. Yeah.
Tough life. Yeah.
It means a lot of long weekends more than anything else. So it's one of the it's a different tact on it than what it would be if we had a physical space, because then the ruler is your cellar door and being able to sell direct to the public and everything else. So when you don't have that, you've got to look at different avenues to build your brand and establish it around it. There's some fantastic examples of that around the world, like Tool, McCullough in the early days, and a few others. So leveraging some of the good things from those and trying to do it our way. It's working. It's not ideal, but it is where we are.
All right. That was actually a good question, by the way.
It was a decent question.
Shit.
So, okay, time now for what everybody has been sat here waiting for. It's part two of Adrian's competition.
It's the only reason why I'm still here, man. Like,
exactly. That's why all these good people are still here, right?
So, we've got a couple of merch pieces from Pirate Life.
We do.
I believe it's a hat.
What do we have, Lee?
A hat and a shirt.
Nice.
Woo! So we might even give it out to two different people. Like, so
is that gonna work?
Jack and Mick, if you wanna pick one each.
Pick two names, yep.
Two names, one each.
The Doc.
Yes!
It's rigged. Emma.
Oh, rigged.
What's up?
Even more rigged. Nah,
that's rigged. That's definitely rigged.
Brad's wife.
I've never met her in my life.
You're in trouble later, mate.
And Marla P.
Oh, Maria.
Maria?
Maria.
Maria.
Oh, that's awesome. Rigged,
dude. Mrs. Barrera.
Liam's mum. She's got Hitler after her, mate. She deserves it.
All right, so...
Are we happy with that? We're happy?
Let's roll with it. Let's go.
Yeah, I hope this question is a lot better than the first one.
Oh, you're in for a treat.
So,
I reckon the Muppets version of General Hospital is a lot better than the real one.
We'll do that next time, Doug.
So, your brewer is Pirate Life, but how much do you know about the life of internet pirates? We are each going to read out a statement, and you have to tell us which one is true. So, why don't you start this time, Liam?
All right, cool. Remember that anti-piracy ad shown before the movies and DVDs that said you wouldn't steal a car? Well, apparently they would steal music because the song using it was actually stolen.
Brad?
Option two. The number one demographic that downloaded Captain Phillips, a movie about a freighter hijacked by Somali pirates, was... Somali pirates.
Or option three.
I don't think that's true.
Option three is Kim.com, founder of file sharing site Mega Upload, moved to New Zealand in 2010, where he briefly changed his name to Kim.co.nz.
So, Jack, what do you reckon?
I hope it's C.
Speechless.
If that's not true, Adrian, that's fucking
number
amazing.
One.
Number one? What do you reckon, Mick? What do you reckon, Mick?
He has to say number one now.
You just give it away.
Number one is right.
Excellent.
Kim.co.nz, that's amazing.
That was not rigged at all, I swear. The Kiwi guy picked the Kiwi guy. Brad picked his wife. Liam picked his mum.
And so you guys, I think we should give tickets out
the We should give out the prize for best questions.
Are there any other questions from from the floor? For
try to top the current questions.
Yeah. Your last chance to get that bottle of beer.
So awesome.
Winner. The question was, why are we so awesome? The answer is because Tom's not here.
Ooh.
Low blow.
Hi, Tom.
We do have another question.
It's better not be about up, dog.
It's not. I'm not Tom.
You had to remind him, didn't you?
So you guys, Pyrolife guys, you've gone from like 0 to 100 heck in like 6 months, and now you're like brewing for the Hilltoppers. Like, if that was me, that kind of growth would terrify me. Like the speed at which you grow. Like, are you freaked out by how big it's gotten and how fast, or have you just taken that in your stride?
Excitement's probably the best word to use, I think. It kind of comes like both me and Red have, you know, we've had 6-7 years in the industry now, and worked on big scale. Working with creatures, working on big scale stuff. It's an exciting point to get some bigger tanks in and actually start turning some beers and running the brewery 24 hours. That's what me and Red love about the beer industry, when we really get going and, you know, you're punching beer every day of the week and packing beer for 24 hours a day every day of the week. That's the fun in it for us, I think. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I think when we got started, our concept was a production brewery. We don't have a front of house, and we don't plan to have a front of house. It's why we've gone so hard to get some national distribution. So I think the growth has been exciting but surprising. But I think if you are passionate about what you do, and you've got a plan and you've got a vision, and you're dealing, you know, to me, the craft industry is such a fantastic industry. And, you know, one of the jobs, I say to the boys all the time, you just keep making great beer. As Doc makes great beer and other people make great beer, then people become passionate about that beer as well. And I think it's just that concept of energy and passion that if you keep working through that, good things will happen. And good things, whether it's the Tom Foley collaboration, or it's the great times we have in New South Wales, or it's the Hilltop Woods and Golden Era, they're things that happen because people see that you are passionate and you care and you've got that vision. I think that's the key aspect to our business.
I think if you just keep brewing beers that you actually want to drink, that it'll just come through. So I think it applies for everyone here on the table that, I mean, I don't brew, but if I did brew, I'd brew beers that I want to drink, and I'd hope someone wants to drink it. If they do, that's fucking awesome. So, and I think it's all about credibility and just having that passion. That passion is like, it's very hard to fake. So, yeah, thank you. Yeah,
cheers. But I've got one question. Is there a possibility that the section that is the quiz section, can that be deleted from the next program?
That was the one thing Adrian added to this event. So.
You got it right. I got it wrong. What are you worried about?
I just remember last time you were on an episode, Doc, and we did the blind tasting.
Yeah, let's just move on.
We'll just move on. All right. Don't mention the blind tasting.
We were going to give you a chance to redeem yourself, but we decided against it.
It could have gone down in a blaze of glory. Like Adrian's quiz.
Doc, what are you up to for the rest of this week?
Tomorrow night, tomorrow afternoon at the Union Hotel, there's a brewtathlon. I think there's a dozen brewers doing teams with punters doing pub sport games at the Union. Right. The winning brewery team gets a tap point for a year.
Oh.
So,
wow. So you've been training?
No. You can't train for this sort of pub sport games that they've got in mind. It's not your traditional, I think, darts and pool and stuff like that. I think
it's like keg rolling and...
This is a flowers event. So
someone's going to hospital, right?
Oh, yeah. Probably more than one. So that's tomorrow afternoon. Wednesday is a gypsy brew event at the Union. All taps are gypsy brewers. I'll have a tap there. I'm running Ale Stars with Stone Brewing at the tap house same nice. Night. Thursday is Monster IPA. at Bitterfew, and I'm also running similar to Ale Stars but not an Ale Stars event at Tap House with Garage Project.
So do you have a Monster IPA yet?
I do. The last 20 litre keg of Operation Paralysis will be on a bit of you. Friday night I'm here for What's Up Mother Funker?
Where's the Funk Mother Pucker?
Yeah, that one. Which is the launch of Dr. Funk in Australia.
Nice.
And then there's about four other events in between all that, but I've forgotten what they are.
So busy week then?
Day by day basis.
I was going to say a quiet week then.
How about you guys, Pirate Life guys? How are you?
What
are you
nothing at all, basically.
You go to bed now for the next 3 weeks.
They're in Newcastle.
Yeah, we'll go up and see the Modus Operandi guys on Monday, hang out with them for an afternoon, go up to Newcastle and just see some people because they're pretty upset with us. Come back down here. We've got an event on Thursday. Do a tasting at Oak and Barrel or Oak Barrel,
yeah, whatever
it's called. And then we're doing a cocktail drink, Piratical Storm. So it's dark and stormy with double IPA. So rum, ginger beer, double
IPA.
Where
is that at?
At Hinky Dinks.
At Hinky Dinks.
Yeah,
nice.
So that's Thursday night. Yeah. Beer awards on Friday and go home.
Or we can always have, like, yeah, if Willie said he could just make some here.
Yeah.
Great idea, Willie.
Hey, Willie, I'd get started now because I'm about ready for one.
So I think we're going to wrap it up here, guys. I think we've talked shit long enough, but it's sessionable. That's what we do.
It's very good shit.
Yeah, thank you. Can we get a big shout out to Doc and Jack and Mick for coming down? We are in the middle of a very busy week, and it is punishing on anyone in the industry. I think Will from Ferrell said it right when he said a craft beer week ages you 10 years, so God knows how the last year has been for you two boys. But yeah, we really do appreciate all three of you coming down. A big thank you for you guys for coming down.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Once again, a big shout out to Willie and the crew here at Camaray Craft for looking after us. I'm not sure if you all read the terms and conditions when you bought a ticket off City Craft Beer Week, but down in the third last line it said something that you all have to buy Willie a drink afterwards. Yeah. He's not denying it either.
He has to do laybacks of the double IPA, I'm pretty sure.
What, just drain the keg? Or?
Yeah.
Anything else?
Yeah, just... Just on behalf of the Doc and Jack and I think we should do a bit of shout out for the guys that run the show here. They've done a great job, and
thank you.
Again, it's passion and it's love, so it's fantastic. So thanks very much.
Thank you.
I can concur. I've done a couple of sessionable sessions now, and it's always fun. It's even worse to hear yourself, your voice back on podcast.
Imagine how we feel, mate.
And having done a couple of events now with the Pirate Life guys as well, we did Ale Stars and something else as well. It's all been enjoyable. It's all fun. It's all part of being an inclusive industry. It's awesome. Cheers.
That's what the craft beer industry is all about. It's all hugs and beers. All right, guys, I think we're going to wrap it up there. So thank you very much. And hopefully if we still talk to each other, we might even do this next year. You never know. Cheers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go get some beers.
He's still mic'd.
We pillage, we plunder, we rifle and loot. Drink up, me heart is your home. We kidnap and ravage and don't give a hoot. Drink up, me heart is your home. Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate's mic for me.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers.